Well, that clip is from the movie Cheaper by the Dozen. Most parents don't have 12 kids at home at one time. But I think all of us as parents have faced those moments when everything just felt like it was out of control. I spoke at a week at church camp last summer, and it was a high school week of camp, and one of the volunteers had brought her 5-year-old son along. And he was a great kid, but man, a strong-willed child. And as long as everything was going his way, it was fine. But whenever it was time to eat breakfast and he didn't want to eat breakfast, or he wanted to swim in the pool and it wasn't time to swim in the pool, or it was time to sit down and he wanted to stand up, you know, look out, because it was just a battle all the time. And it's hard being a parent in those kind of situations because you can't tar and feather your child in public, you know. It's just all these people watching you parent, and it's really, really stressful. About 25 years ago, Gail and I went to a seminar on parenting. It was by Gary and Anne-Marie Ezzo. It was called Growing Kids God's Way. And I wouldn't say that we agreed with everything that they taught in that seminar, but they talked about four kind of primary stages of parenting that we all go through in dealing with our kids, and that we handle those stages differently. They talked about the preschool years, kind of birth up through about age 5. This is primarily a discipline stage of life. During that time, parents establish authority, and they help kids learn right from wrong. It's exhausting to be consistent during those times. It's the do this, don't do that stage of life, and you're constantly correcting. But you are setting a foundation early on for what comes later. See, parents, when kids reach about the age of 5, they don't stop disciplining, but the stage kind of changes. Around 5 or 6, up to about age 12, parents are in more of a training stage, okay? You kind of walk along with your kids. You show them how to make decisions, how to relate to other people, how to handle conflict and sorrow and joy and just disappointments, all the different aspects of life. Then, in the teen years, kind of 13 to 19, they call that the coaching stage. If you think about a sports team, a team might prepare for months for the season, but once that season starts, the coach can't just walk out onto the field or out onto the court and redo things in the middle of a game, right? They have to coach from the sidelines. They send in plays. And once kids reach their teen years, parenting happens more from the sidelines as well. Now, don't get me wrong. You're still deeply involved in their lives, but you don't spend every moment with them anymore. You begin to release them gradually. You have to trust them to learn to make decisions on their own. And then once kids reach their 20s and beyond, you're in more of a friendship stage. This is the payoff for all the hard work of parenting early on. You never stop being mom and dad, but you relate to them differently when they become adults. And so they talk about the Ezzos. They talk about discipline, training, coaching, and then friendship. Now, obviously, you don't get to move from one stage to the next on your child's 6th, 13th, and 20th birthdays, right? It's not that tidy. It's a messy process. There's a lot of overlap. But parenting does need to change over the years. I would also say, understand this is not a magic formula for parenting success, right? The reality is all kids have a free will. And you could be the best parent in the world. Your kids are going to make some mistakes sometimes. They're going to rebel sometimes. I mean, Adam and Eve were the only people in the history of the world who had a perfect parent, and they still blew it, right? There are no guarantees. But I think understanding the different stages of parenting is helpful. Now, there are a couple of problems that often arise when it comes to these stages of parenting. One is that parents want to jump to the friendship stage before the kids are ready. And so they abdicate their authority in favor of being fun. Now, I'm not saying that we can't enjoy spending time with our kids and doing fun things together when they're young. It's just that you can't just be your child's pal, right? Because you need to be an authority figure in their lives. I mean, by all means, we ought to laugh together, again, play together, enjoy time together when kids are young. But they've got plenty of friends. They don't need you to be their friend at that stage of life. Your role as a mom or a dad is too important. Now, the other problem that happens a lot of times is that parents will swing the pendulum to the opposite extreme. Some parents treat their 10-year-old like he's 5 and their teenage daughter like she's 11 and their grown children like they're still in high school. As parents, we need to move through the stages of development so our kids can grow up to become the adults that God made them to be. Somebody said the goal of parenting is to have a child and then work yourself out of a job. So listen, wherever you are in this process, you know, you don't stop being a parent no matter what, but we want to release kids to stand on their own two feet. We are wrapping up a series today. It's called Homeland Security, God's Truth Guarding Your Home. And I want to focus today on this whole idea of parenting, and especially when it comes to discipline. Now, I understand we have people here today in all different stages of parenting. Some of you are like Gail and I, and you know what? Your kids are grown and gone. Others of you have kids still at home, and the empty nest sounds like a pretty good deal right now. You'd like to get in on that, right? Some of you don't have kids. Some of you wish you had kids. Some of you have teenagers, and it's a battle of wills all the time. You might be involved in a battle right now that started this morning before church, and it hasn't quite wrapped up yet. You know, I understand that we all find, you know, different aspects of this. Some of you are maybe raising grandkids, you know. But no matter where you are in this process, even if you don't have children, no intention, we can all help shape the next generation. We kind of share that responsibility. And so some of these principles, I hope, will apply. Maybe you've heard the phrase, the Church of Jesus Christ is always one generation away from extinction. See, we have this responsibility to pass on the legacy of faith that's been passed on to us. And so I want to focus for a few minutes today on this mandate that we have to guard our children and to do it well. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4 says, fathers, it's talking to parents, but specifically now dads, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Fathers, don't exasperate. Moms and dads, it goes for both of us. We ought not exasperate our kids. Now, this doesn't mean don't discipline. It doesn't mean, well, I don't want to upset little Johnny, so we just let them do whatever they want. Now, one of the most exasperating things that we can do for kids is to give them no boundaries and no guidelines. It's frustrating. Can you imagine if there were no rules on the highway? Would we have freedom? No. It'd be chaos. And in the home, the absence of rules is a perfect formula for frustration and for bedlam. Children need boundaries so they can have security and so they can learn proper behavior. Somebody said parents need to teach kids that no is a complete sentence. You know, it's like parents really are in charge. And if you don't make those expectations clear, then it's exasperating. Now, the other way that fathers and mothers can exasperate their kids is that we overprotect them and we have too many rules. Right? The boundaries are so cumbersome, kids never learn to try and fail within safe parameters, and they're not able to stretch at all. John Rosemond talks about parenting by helicopter, where parents just hover over their kids, and they watch everything, and they try to control and manipulate, and kids never learn to spread their wings and fly. You know, the goal of parenting is to have a child and work yourself out of a job. And so as children mature, we ought to be able to loosen our grip. You know, I was reading a passage the other day, had nothing to do with parenting at all, but I thought this was really interesting. Revelation chapter 3, verse 20 is one of those verses that we highlight, we put up on plaques on the wall. It says, Jesus is talking. He says, look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and we will share a meal together as friends. That's a beautiful verse, beautiful promise. We love this verse. But do you know what comes in the verse before this verse? I've never seen this on a plaque on the wall. Jesus says, I correct and discipline everyone I love. So be diligent and turn from your indifference. Those verses go back to back, right? Jesus wants to be friends with us and to have this meaningful relationship with us. And also, discipline and correction are a part of a loving relationship with him. It's not a choice of love or discipline. You can't have one without the other. Listen to this verse in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Discipline is painful. Nobody goes looking for it. It's no fun, but it's essential for right living. And, you know, for what it's worth, if you've had to be the disciplinarian, it is not pleasant for the one dishing it out either, is it? I realize that kids don't fall for the, this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you line. I get that. But the reality is, it can be tiring and frustrating and maddening and heartbreaking to constantly be trying to administer discipline. One of my all-time favorite cartoons shows this dad. He's standing in the doorway of his son's room. You can see the little boy sitting on the bed in the background. And the dad says to the mom, how am I supposed to spank him when he keeps saying, Lord God of Israel, have mercy on me? You know, discipline is just hard. But it is our responsibility as parents. In fact, I'm going to give you a bottom line, and then we're going to try to dig into this a little deeper. And this goes for kids. It goes for parents. It goes for grandparents. It goes for everybody. All right, bottom line, God's boundaries are not a cage to confine us. They're guardrails to protect us. Not a cage to confine us, but guardrails to protect us. And this applies in lots of different settings, but specifically today in thinking about the home, children need boundaries. It's not cruel, it's not insensitive to set up clear expectations and then demand that they be met. Now, kids are not going to be perfect, but without the necessary boundaries, we are setting them up for failure later on. And so we have to establish authority early. We read last week in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and you will enjoy long life on the earth. See, God's boundaries are not a cage. They're guardrails. When kids learn to submit to mom and dad, then they can go on later on to submit to authority to enjoy a long life. You might think of it like this, that boundaries plus compliance equals freedom. You know, twice in the New Testament book of James, he talks about God's perfect law that brings freedom. Law, or the rules of God, actually are what bring freedom to our lives. When children understand the boundaries, then they're free to explore their environment, they can discover new things, and yet they're doing it within a safe parameter. And so listen, whether you're a grandparent or a parent, let me just throw out some things, maybe some words of advice for today. Maybe you'll be a parent at some point in the future. The first thing is be confident. Okay, God put you in charge. God delegated a certain authority to moms and dads. You are probably more capable than you feel like you are. You have more wisdom from life experience than your kids do. Kids need the security of knowing that somebody is in charge. If we vacillate and remain indecisive, they're going to lack security. Can you imagine a referee in a basketball game trying to negotiate with the players on the court? You know, a defensive player fouls the shooter and the referee blows his whistle and says, how many times have I told you not to do that? And the guy says, what are you talking about? I didn't touch him. And the other guy says, are you kidding? He killed me. And the referee says, it's obvious we're getting nowhere here. You know, I don't know who's at fault, but let's just not let it happen again. And then they play a little bit longer, and it happens again. And he throws his hands up in the air and says, what am I going to do with you? And he storms off the court. The game falls apart if somebody is not in control. Parents have got to take control in the home. Every issue should not be a debate. Every instruction should not lead to an argument. You can't argue with your kids. You can't win an argument with your kids. And it's not because you're wrong. It's because they won't let you win. Right? When you give an instruction, the typical response is not, I'd be glad to. In most homes, maybe in yours, the typical response is why. Why is not a request for an explanation. It's an invitation to an argument. If it was a request for an explanation, then every once in a while they would say, well, since you put it that way, that's clearly logical. I would be glad to. But that doesn't happen, right? And why is an invitation for an argument? When kids ask why, we ought to do two things. First of all, give a just simple, clear explanation. If that's not enough, you say, look, because I told you so. Right now I'm in charge. Someday you'll get to be in charge. Mark said, God said I'm in charge. And so I'm telling you, this is the way it's going to be for now. Right. I have told this story over and over again. Poor Daniel's got to hear it again. My son who's here today. But our older son, his older brother, Aaron, I call this the day that will live in infamy for parenting. There's Aaron there. He was about 3 years old, about that age. It was the day before Father's Day, and Gail was gone. I was in charge. We were getting ready to go to a father and son banquet at our church. And we had taught Aaron that if he burped, he was supposed to say, excuse me. It's a very simple thing. And Aaron burped, and he didn't say anything. And I said, Aaron, what do you say? And he just looked at me. And I said, Aaron, you need to say excuse me. And he said, uh-uh. And I said, Aaron, you need to say excuse me. And he said, uh-uh. And I said, a little louder, you need to say excuse me. And he said, a little louder, uh-uh. That began a battle of wills that I am not making this up. It lasted 2 hours and 20 minutes. That's how long it took him to say excuse me. It was unbelievable. We were an hour late for the father and son banquet, and I'm the preacher of the church. It was unbelievable. I mean, there were timeouts, and there were spankings, and there were hugs, and there was a little begging, and there were tears on both sides. 2 hours and 20 minutes. But listen, it wasn't about winning and losing. It was about me winning and him losing, okay? It wasn't just who's more stubborn. It's about establishing boundaries. If you give in that time, what happens next time? Parents, we have got to take control, and it is not any fun. But I'm telling you, you have to do it. You have to do it. If you overlook the defiance, things are going to break down really quickly. This kind of leads to a principle. Okay, this is the part I don't want you to miss from this. It is easier to teach that kind of respect for authority when kids are 3 years old than it is when they're 13 or when they're 18. I'm telling you, here's the principle. It's easier to start out strict and gradually loosen control than to start out lenient and try to rein kids in later on. Think about a pyramid, okay? Wide at the bottom, narrow at the top. A lot of parents make the mistake of trying to set up boundaries like that with kids. When the kids are young, they start out with the boundaries really wide. I mean, how much trouble can a two-year-old get into anyway, right? And so they enforce few restrictions. Kids kind of get away with murder. They take advantage of it. But then as the children grow older, parents have to try to rein them in. And things are getting out of control, so they have to try to tighten the boundaries. And I'm telling you, talk about exasperating. Everybody's frustrated. It is just, it's a battle all the time, and that's why a lot of homes are in shambles today. The wiser approach is the upside-down pyramid. You keep those boundaries really tight when kids are young. You enforce the rules and expectations, and then gradually you release. As they mature, the boundaries become more relaxed. Children become responsible adults. They make their own decisions. The pyramid approach is guaranteed to exasperate everybody. The upside-down pyramid is a way toward, you know, them becoming healthy, mature adults. When kids are little, we have to be vigilant and firm. Not cruel and harsh, but what I like to call relentlessly attentive. Right? Relentlessly attentive. The boundaries are tight. It's exhausting. It's hard work. But if you do that when they're little, then you can gradually release them later on. I'm going back to Aaron again. Poor Aaron, not here to defend himself. When Aaron was about 8 or 9 years old, we talked about giving him away. We decided not to do that. But I'm telling you, oh my gosh, every day was a battle of wills. And I would have people tell me, oh, you think it's bad now? Wait till he's a teenager. And I was scared to death. And then I finally decided, you know what? I'm not going to expect the worst. I'm not going to set myself up for that kind of stress and failure. And so, you know, we just gutted it out and we prayed and prayed. And I'm telling you what, teen years, they weren't a breeze and he wasn't perfect, but I was nothing like the preteen years. Because when you are consistent when they're young, you set those boundaries really tight, then you can gradually release. And once we started releasing, it just got better for everybody. And it was a much more enjoyable process. And today, you know what? Today he's a solid husband and father. He teaches at a Christian high school. He's helping shape the next generation. But it was hard work. This is not a magic formula, okay? I mean, the best parents have kids that rebel sometimes. And I mean, sometimes they break your heart. Maybe you're here today and you're thinking, you know what, I look back and I've been really lax in my child rearing. I'm struggling right now with a defiant teenager, maybe a young adult, and the relationship's broken. Let me just say, don't give up. If you have any relationship, even if it's very broken, then there is some opportunity for you to have influence. But it's going to take some work, and it's going to take some time. The best way to help kids become productive adults is to build into them when they're young. Once that authority is established, then you gradually release them and they find that freedom is a reward for compliance. God's boundaries are not a cage to confine. They're guardrails to protect. Now, let me give you a second suggestion. The second thing when it comes to discipline is to be clear. Okay? Kids need well-defined boundaries. Some common mistakes that parents often make when it comes to giving instructions. Sometimes we phrase instructions as if they're questions. How about picking up your toys so you can go to bed? Or why don't you go brush your teeth and then we can read a book together? Or then there's the ever popular, do you want a spanking? As a matter of fact, Mom, I've given that some thought. No, I prefer not to have one. Well, thanks for asking though. You know, what is that? Just let them know what's expected, right? Sometimes instead of questions, we make wishes. I wish you'd stop chomping that gum. I wish you'd go clean up your room before the health department condemns our house, you know. I wish you'd turn that music down. That's just a passive complaint. You know, kids don't grant wishes. Genies grant wishes. It's not a wish. This is what's expected. Sometimes we're a little too vague in what we say. When you're talking to a preschooler and you say, don't get wild at grandma's house, well, what does that mean? Don't play with a chainsaw? I mean, well, you know, what does that mean? Maybe you have to say, don't jump up and down on the furniture and don't run through the house, don't juggle grandma's crystal. I don't know, but just be clear with them because they need that, especially when they're little. A third thing is to be consistent, right? Discipline is a way of life. Man, children ought to be able to understand. I mean, they ought to be able to predict the consequences of their behavior because you're consistent. If you passively sit by, just it gets worse and worse and worse, and finally you just explode because you can't take it anymore, they're going to be like, what just happened? Mom just went over the edge. Instead, we need to deal with things one thing at a time. Ephesians 6:4, listen to it again. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and the instruction of the Lord. Discipline is not exasperating. Inconsistency is exasperating. We have to be consistent. Discipline is not an occasional action. It's a theme that's kind of woven throughout a parent-child relationship. Kids need established limits. I heard a parenting tip years ago. We didn't always follow this very well, but it was a great tip, and it is first time every time. To just establish that idea, it's first time every time. You don't have to count before your kids know they're supposed to obey. You know, you don't have to get louder and louder until the neighbors think you're talking to them. Kids need to be taught that when you say it, that's what you expect. And that kind of consistency will go a long way. Now, Gail and I, when our kids were young, we didn't always agree on the rules. But, you know, you've got to support each other, right? You have to stand up for each other as parents. And you got to do this together as a team. It's going to work so much better that way. Don't undermine your spouse on this with the kids. God's boundaries, listen, they're not a cage to confine, but they're guardrails to protect. Now, before we just wrap this thing up, let me say a few things about discipline itself and administering discipline. We need to remember that the kind of the discipline needs to fit the violation, right? And it also needs to fit the nature of the child. Some kids are very sensitive. Man, you can just kind of look at him crossways. I had a son like that. You know, you just look at him, and man, he got it. And others, it sort of took a 2x4 upside the head before they even realized you were talking to them. You know, there's just different personalities, and we need to discipline according to their personality. We also need the discipline for deliberate defiance. You know what? Kids are going to be kids. They're going to spill things sometimes. They're going to forget things sometimes. You don't discipline a child for acting his age. You discipline for willful defiance. And listen, I am in no way, I mean, I hope this goes without saying, I'm not talking about anything abusive to children. It is a horrible thing to mistreat and excessively punish a child, but we do need to set firm limits and firmly confront disobedience. And you may disagree with some things that I'm going to say right now, and that's okay. We don't have to agree on everything. Let's just please agree that abuse is a horrible thing, but that God has given us a responsibility to set boundaries for our kids. So here's some just quick suggestions about disciplining. For very young kids, you know, when they begin to understand right and wrong at a year old, up to about age 3, isolation can be a very effective form of discipline to get their attention. If a child throws a temper tantrum and he's kicking and screaming and holding his breath, if you give in to that, do you think it's going to get better? Oh my gosh, no. I mean, it might look different in the future, but they're just going to keep throwing fits to get their way. You can't give in to that. Instead of surrendering, you might need to pick a child up, go put him in timeout somewhere, and let him realize that the unpleasantness of isolation is a result of throwing a fit. Maybe a child is pushing somebody or he's touching something he's not supposed to. Maybe just take his hands in yours and just hold them really still and just look at him and explain why he's not supposed to do whatever it is. And that restraining itself can be frustrating, unpleasant, but it can help teach the lesson. It's an isolation kind of an approach. When kids get to be, you know, into preschool years and kind of out of their toddler years, you know what? Spanking can be an effective form of discipline. Nothing abusive, and I know this is controversial, I'm just saying a swat on the bottom can, especially for a strong-willed child, can be a helpful form of discipline. Now, let me just say some specific things about that. I don't believe you should ever slap a child in the face. I'm not talking about hitting a child. It's demeaning to do that. It can be abusive if you're not careful. I'm talking about a swat on the rear end, you know, and you need to be careful not to spank in anger. Spanking is a last resort when disobedience continues to be displayed. The more upset you are with a child's behavior, the more you probably need to take a break and let them go to their room before you administer discipline, because you're not disciplining emotionally, it's because you're teaching an important lesson. I would say never physically discipline, never spank in public. It's humiliating for the child and it's really awkward for everybody, right? We talked about this and we would use an instrument besides the hand, okay? Your hands ought to be for loving on your kids, and we had a spanking spoon that a swat on the bottom was not pleasant when the kids were little, but that's, we wanted to sort of separate our physical hands from the instrument of discipline. Proverbs 22:15 says, "A youngster's heart is filled with foolishness, but physical discipline will drive it far away." Now, when kids are moving through the elementary years, removing privileges, I'm telling you what, the best thing about smartphones now is you got a great opportunity for discipline. I'm just saying. Okay? You start removing things, maybe it's a car. That can be an important thing. You know, parents used to send kids to their room, you know, when they were in trouble. Good grief, their rooms now have televisions and surround sound and Bluetooth. Send them to your room, right? Don't go to their rooms are too cool. But you remove some privileges and set some boundaries. Some parents assign extra work as discipline, and that's okay, but I just want to offer you a warning about that. You don't want to teach children, sort of accidentally teach them, that all work is a punishment. God gave us work as a gift. We're going to talk about that early next year. But the reality is that work is something that we do to be productive, and God's given us this opportunity. So work should not be always tied to discipline. Now, establish control early. This is a quote from psychologist Brenda Hunter. She said, "Remember that the wild two-year-old, if undisciplined, will become a surly six-year-old. And if left untamed, he may become the uncontrolled teenager who breaks your heart." So you have to take charge and do it now, she says. God's boundaries are not a cage to confine. Boundaries are guardrails to protect. And listen, the ultimate goal of all of this, you know, why go through all this stress and hassle with your kids? Because ultimately, we want them to learn to respect and honor and submit to the Lord. I mean, moms and dads, we don't discipline because we're bigger than they are, or because we want a quiet house, or because we're just tired of the way they're acting. We discipline because ultimately, we want them to submit to our authority so they will one day submit to God's authority. Nothing becomes more important than that. Listen, I know that topics like this can be tough for lots of different reasons. Some of you are saying, "I don't have kids. Why are we talking about this?" Others of you, maybe you're thinking, "I have so many regrets. I wish I could do it over again." Others of you are scared to death because it hasn't even started yet, and you know it's coming, and it's kind of frightening. Let me just say this. If you're not a perfect parent, you know, get in line, right? That's all of us. And you don't have perfect kids, join the club. That's all of us. And you have regrets about the past, welcome to the human race. That's all of us. None of us are perfect parents. None of us have perfect kids. None of us were perfect kids, no matter what your grandma says about you, you know, now. But as parents, we have this incredible opportunity. We have this responsibility to shape the next generation. And so we set boundaries and we uphold them to give our kids the best chance possible. Back in 2007, our family went to the Grand Canyon. And man, it was just an awesome trip. I love the Grand Canyon. Unbelievable. But I'm not kidding you. I could hardly stand to be at the edge of the canyon if there were other people around, because people are idiots. I mean, they just let their kids wander up to this 2,000-foot cliff, you know, little kids, and there's no guardrails there. I mean, people are getting their picture taken, and they're backing up as their friend's taking their picture. It's like, hello, people die here every year. I really don't want to see that on vacation. If you want to fall over, wait till I'm gone. Unbelievable. I mean, I was stressed out whenever there were people there because there were no boundaries. But if boundaries are there, either there's a rail or there are parents there with enough sense to establish some, then you can relax and enjoy this beautiful gift that God has given to us. God's boundaries are not a cage to confine. They are guardrails to protect. Let's pray.